What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care, so sit back, relax, and defocus.
This month, Arkansas became the fourth state to expand optometry scope of practice to include the use of non-invasive laser surgical procedures, including YAG capsulotomy, selective laser trabeculoplasty, and laser peripheral iridotomy. The Arkansas bill passed through House and Senate chambers with bipartisan support before being signed into law by the governor on March 27, 2019. Arkansas now joins Oklahoma, Louisiana, and Kentucky as states that have expanded optometry scope to include these procedures and broaden access to ocular care. But Arkansas is not the only state that presented legislature this year. Wyoming's Senate File 55 was passed in January 2019 and now goes to the House for a vote. This scope expansion bill would allow the use of non-invasive laser procedures and expanded oral prescribing abilities. And in Texas, optometrists are working to expand their scope to allow for the diagnosis and treatment of patients with glaucoma without needing to first refer to an ophthalmologist, as well as the ability to prescribe a full course of oral medication if needed. Right now, they can prescribe oral medications for the treatment of ocular health conditions, but only for less than 10 days. Not all legislative work optometry faces as a profession is about expanding scope, though. Look no further than Oklahoma's recent legislative battle to defend the right of optometrists to practice to the full scope as outlined by their state law. The story of State Question 793 and how optometry rallied together against seemingly impossible odds on today's podcast.
Well, hello, everybody. It is time for another Defocus Media podcast. I'm Jennifer Lyerly, and I've got my partner in crime with me, Dr. Daryl Glover, here, just like always. Well, taking time out of our very busy schedules, I want to say thank you to our guest today, Dr. Jason Ellen. But this is a really important story that I think as we gear up into 2019 has so much inspiration to take us into next year. There was a major victory in Oklahoma, and I would go so far as to say nationally for optometrists this year. And Dr. Ellen is on the front lines and trying to help make that action happen. So Dr. Ellen, if you wouldn't mind just introducing yourself and tell us a little bit about your practice in Oklahoma.
Sure. My name's Jason Ellen. I am been an optometrist for about 20 years now and in practice in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I am a partner of an Oklahoma Medical Eye Group. We have currently three ophthalmologists and five optometrists, with one resident practicing in two major locations. Focus is mainly surgical medical optometry, and it's basically a referral-based practice that sees patients from the local optometric community.
So obviously you've been very much involved in the Oklahoma State Optometric Society. Tell me a little bit about how you got involved in your work in the state and local level.
Started out as a student, was president of the state or president of our student association, and that was my initial introduction. So there's a huge push of our school and our state board and the Oklahoma Association of Optometric Physicians to integrate all three entities very early on, and I think which is very important because as a student, you get inundated with how important a group of optometrists are and how powerful they can be legislatively if you start early. So very beginning as a student, all the way through, I've always been in portions or in contact with the association based with our CE committees, legislative committees, and then joined the executive board as first vice president 3 years ago en route to becoming the president this year.
Awesome.
Really important. So like you have put a lot of work into this and now kind of leading the charge for Oklahoma.
Whether that is by design or by fate, I happen to be in this position this year, just when it happened to come to a head with the Walmart state question.
Well, I know one thing. Whenever I was in optometry school, we always talked about Oklahoma really setting the bar and also North Carolina, where Jen and I practice. Mm-hmm. But I would love to know, what are the current laws in Oklahoma when it comes to scope of optometry? Because you guys can do so much more than we can.
I didn't really think about it. When I was a student in Tahlequah, we practiced full scope at that time using lasers and minor surgical procedures because it was kind of defined as taught law. That changed. And when I was actually in school, we had to go back and go to the legislature to define the fact that we could do laser procedures because it was challenged. And then later had to come back and define what surgery was so we could actually perform minor surgical procedures. But right now, basically, surgical procedures in our legislative or the way they're legislated is we are not inclusive, meaning we don't have to ask the legislator, can we do this procedure? Can we do this procedure? Our law is set up where we are limited to only performing procedures on certain aspects of the eye. So we can't penetrate tenons. We can't penetrate the sclera. We can't do laser surgery on the retina. So it limits areas we can do, but it doesn't limit us to things and procedures and options that may be coming up in the future. Any procedure that's open to the cornea, to the lids, that is not cosmetic lid surgery, that's excluded, or LASIK, anything else is pretty much open as taught. Medications, I guess, class 3 narcotics, up to actually now class 2 for a couple of them. And so that's kind of the standard that was set in Oklahoma a long time back.
Now, is this something that most optometrists practice as far as the full scope, or do you have a few folks that just tend to fall back and not really use lasers or class 2-3 drugs, or how does that work, or who's using what as far as the scope of optometry there?
So it's probably like most places, we have a full range and a full scope. And one of the things I love about optometry is you can come out and you can specialize in so many different aspects. It's huge, from pediatrics to geriatrics to medical to refractive. I would say that the majority of those of us that are doing minor surgical procedures and laser procedures are either in the larger groups in the metro areas or in the very rural areas. So Oklahoma is a very rural state. There's some of our towns that are 2.5 hours from any metropolis, and therefore some of those doctors in those rural states do their own lasers, do their minor surgical procedures, because patients just don't want to travel 2.5 hours to get a YAG laser, SLT, or lumps and bumps, or procedures like that. Within our metro areas, I'd say the majority is still practicing what most of the country does, but there's a decent size of us that are in multidisciplinary practices that practice at a higher level than what we'd say general optometry.
I think the real key is that you guys have the opportunity, and as technology becomes available, the way the law is written, you can adopt new technology that we can't even dream that exists right now, where many states are limited by old-fashioned laws that dictate exactly what pieces of equipment they can use. And those modalities, are limiting as new technology becomes available. We constantly have to go back to legislature and get new technologies approved this way.
That was the big, in our most recent legislative, and this has been almost 10 years or 8 or 9 years ago when we did the surgery law. That was one thing we fought heavily against, was having to come back and dictate what we can do. We wanted to put in an exclusivity law, which is the things and the areas of the eye that we don't want to do. We don't want to go in and do cataract surgery. We don't want to go in and do retinal laser surgery. We want to do everything we can in the front part of the eye. So I think it's very important. Now, that, as you know, from Alaska, that their law is probably the most expansive at this point, because it's now an as-taught law with no exclusion. So if there's a goal for every state legislatively, that law is the pinnacle. To have an as-taught law from your state board, that means the schools then dictate what you can and can't do. That's basically what medicine has, is you can perform anything in any area as long as it's being taught, whether it's in school or in CE later.
Well, Oklahoma also has some more unique and protective legislation about the employment of ODs. Can you fill us in a little bit about what regulations are on the books as far as employment goes?
So right now, as an optometrist, we can only be employed by another optometrist, an ophthalmologist, or an eye care associated industry, hospital, any healthcare service, something along those lines, something in the medical field. We cannot be directly employed by a corporation. And that was set up many years ago, I'm sure, with this new 793K question. There was a lot in corporate ownership or corporate employment, and also the two-door law. So all that was set up back in the 70s when the law was written about how an optometrist can practice and how corporations can interfere if they, own the facility and quote-unquote own the doctor. And again, that was set up basically to keep optometry in a medical focus, even back in the 70s, to make sure it was an independent practice run by the doctor for the patients, not run by a corporation for their benefit first.
You mentioned state question 793. So let's talk just a little bit more about that, because that was the major battle the Oklahoma Optometric Society faced this year. So legislators put forth state question 793. It was called the Right for Optometrists and Opticians to Practice in Retail Establishment Initiative. Tell us a little bit about the language that was proposed in that bill and why Oklahoma optometry felt like, boy, this is something we need to fight against.
So this was actually unprecedented, because it actually wasn't the legislator that brought it. it was a state question. An Oklahoma state question is basically a initiative petition in some other states. So the way Oklahoma works, a state question, if Oklahomans as a group want to create a change in the law or a change in the state constitution, they can have enough and they can get enough signatures. They can propose a ballot initiative or a state question that then is ruled upon by the people in a ballot. So one recent example was an alcohol question where they wanted to have alcohol sales in grocery stores and chains. And that was put to the, as a state question. Same thing with medical marijuana was put to a state question because it wasn't going through the legislature. Unlike state question 793, that was not brought up by the patients or people or citizens of Oklahoma. It was brought up by Walmart specifically to help try to usurp the legislative laws and legislated area of optometry to try to get the citizens to vote a change in our laws. The language was such that it was going to try to open up the state constitution, and by opening up the state constitution, making a change for the state without legislative oversight or without legislative control, that would abolish the protections that we had for patients that were set forth back in the day, so in the 70s. Abolish the two-door rule, abolish the ability to be employed only by medical facilities, hospitals, optometrists, ophthalmologists, and abolish the rules of the, one of the big things is our state law has in it is a 51% rule. Meaning if you're in a facility and you have optical and optometric care, you have to provide at least 51% of your revenue has to come from eye care and eyewear sales. If more than that, if less than that comes from eye care, eyewear, then you can't have that entity under that same roof. And that was where Walmart had a big problem because they can currently have an optical right now. They could come in tomorrow and build a Walmart optical within their stores, but it has to be completely separated away from or under or not open to the Walmart stores. So the Walmart brought that language, the 793, to a concerned citizens group to bring it forward to try to abolish all those changes. That was the impetus, and that was the beginning of the state question.
Daryl, and I was looking at some of these proposals. There was also something in there that kind of made it seem like the corporate entity could not only employ, of course, an optometrist, optician, and all that stuff, but also limit what scope they were allowed to practice above and beyond what the Oklahoma state law allowed for optometry to practice. So there was some kind of thing in there, a disclaimer that said that the corporate employer could control the scope that the optometrist was able to actually perform.
Yeah, Jen, that's not good at all because I don't want to just turn into a refractionist and not be able to practice my full scope of optometry. I mean, that's what I went to school for. And I want to be able to, you know, practice both sides, the medical aspect and the retail aspect. So that's no good in my book.
That was probably the biggest focus we had and the biggest response from patients and Oklahoma citizens. Number one, it was open up the Constitution. Strict constitutionalists believe there's no reason Walmart needs to change the state constitution. But the second and the one that got the most resonance, at least at patients in our practice, was giving Walmart control, a corporation, any corporation. We say Walmart because they were the financial backers, but it also includes, you know, Costco, Sears, everybody else that wants to have, well, I guess no longer Sears, but Walgreens. I mean, any of these new CVSs that have small eye clinics in them would give them control to say what you could and couldn't do. And by defining the corporation as the one who could limit the scope, you could create a contract that says you can practice here and here we'll pay you this much, but this is all you can do. And actually the implications were not only could you not practice full scope, but they said they put it in so we wouldn't be doing lasers in Walmart as a marketing gimmick, but it actually gave an implication where they could determine that the scope of optometry within their walls did not include dilation, did not include pressure checks, did not include even what we would consider basic eye care, basic fundamental eye care, and was really restricted to refraction only. And because that statement giving that corporation control was in the Constitution, if that had passed, not only would it have been detrimental, but there's no legislative ability to overturn that once it would have been enacted.
Wow. You know, that brings up a great question, I think, in my opinion. But what is your relationship with ophthalmologists? And were they backing this whole push to limit the scope of optometry?
So in Oklahoma, that's one of the ways we're kind of ahead of some of the other states as well, because Oklahoma optometry and ophthalmology actually get along fairly well as a general rule. There's quite a few co-management centers, starting even back when I was a student. That's where you got most of your education. Something called the Visual Education Foundation was created back in the late 80s, early 90s. And that was founded by an optometrist who became an ophthalmologist. And then that form of co-management really spread. And so I actually have a 50-50 partner that's an ophthalmologist with my practice. And there's a lot of practices that like that, where the optometrist and ophthalmologist get along very well. And actually, even the general optometrist and general ophthalmologists seem to be much more cordial, at least in our state, in a working relationship than what I hear about in other states. And when this came up, individually, most every ophthalmologist said it's not a good thing. But as far as a society, they never would push as a group to say we're against it from a, you know, the Oklahoma Ophthalmological Society. But from individually, we actually got quite a few donations from individual ophthalmologists somewhat quietly behind the scenes, because again, they weren't for it as well. And even many of them spoke against it to the patients in their chair, which again, of course, are potential voters.
So not the big thing that I feel like is especially crazy about the situation you were in, you didn't have to go in and educate a certain number of specific legislators. You had to educate the entire public of Oklahoma who was going to be voting on this. So, I mean, what a daunting task.
that's well said. We were very prepared for legislative bills to come up, and really have been blessed in the fact we really haven't ever lost a legislative battle, because everybody talks about grassroots. And again, instilled into me as a student early on, that's how you get things changed. This is completely new, literally came out of left field. And so the one thing that, you know, Walmart had is a vast number of people walking in and out of the doors. So they can educate someone very quickly on, don't you think you should have an eye care here? Don't you think you should have access to cheaper eye care? And to uninformed public, their message resonated very quickly. Yes, that's what we want. Those greedy doctors, you know, don't care about us. That was the message Walmart put out. And they, of course, we don't know the final numbers, but between $7 and $8 million of money to educate the public over. When we did early polls, what we found, number one, the biggest thing, the public doesn't really trust Walmart when it comes to medical decisions. Number two, patients who see optometrists really trust their optometrist. And I think that's where we started very early in what we had as a body, were patients that we had taken care of. 487 of us across the state actively practicing had seen 20 to 30 patients a day for the past 20 or 30 years. So when you add those numbers up, when you have 6 months to educate and you talk to every single patient and you tell them why this is bad, what we had was trust from a large majority of patients who actually seek eye care. And if they're in our offices, they are more likely a voting population. If they're in our offices, they have probably been treated for a certain problem. Whereas the uninformed public from Walmart was just basically listening to the commercials. So although we did have to spend quite a bit in media, meaning radio, billboards, signage, TV, our biggest push and what made the biggest difference, the two things. One was talking to every single patient in our chair and explaining why it wasn't a good thing, sending letters out to our entire patient population. So most every office had a standard letter we sent, personally signed, to every patient within our database. And then honestly, the social media at the very last week, I think, made the difference. Now, there was 1.6 million votes cast in this election because it was a gubernatorial race. So it was a pretty high population. And the teachers, just to kind of give a background, the teachers were coming out in droves. Actually, every public school was closed to let teachers vote, because the teachers had made a movement on getting raises and having their concerns heard, which hadn't been in the last election. So there was a huge teacher push. So the number of votes and the number of people voting this time was extremely high. But of those 1.6 million votes cast, the difference, the majority that we won by, was 6,500. So 0.2% of the population made a difference. And I think that last week was actually more some of our patients, but also as much in social media, because in that last week was where social media, Facebook, Twitter accounts, the discussions on social media had us higher in the polls percentage wise early on and increasing much more than polls over the phone or polls over the internet. It was the social media polls, because that's a place you can get and you can banter, you can discuss, you can argue, you can raise your point to millions of patients all at once. are millions of people. And that gets shared and spread and read a lot more than a radio ad that gives one side. And I think that was the small bit that tipped the edge in that last week.
Social media can really push you in the right direction of anything that you need in life, especially if you're using it properly.
Absolutely.
Outside of social media, what type of help did you receive from your industry partners, you know, the AOA or other state societies? What did they do to help push this bill to go the right route?
We received about 120,000 in outside donations from state societies. So actually the biggest being California donated $10,000 early on. And that actually sparked some other state associations to give. A few industries, honestly, there wasn't a huge industry donation. Some local opticals kind of helped out. But on a national level, Vision Source gave a small amount. Some of the OD partners gave a small amount. But honestly, most of the donations or most of the money that was raised actually came from the association, from a board rule, assessed every member of the Optometric Association or from our Oklahoma Association, assessed every member $5,000. So we normally pay our state dues of 700 plus the AOA, but this year, every acting member that stayed a member paid an additional $5,000 to the campaign.
Wow.
And that's, and that of course was a very tumultuous decision, which caused a lot of ire in multiple areas. And we did lose some members. We actually gained some members because of that, but that just shows the cohesiveness of the Oklahoma Optometric Group, because when you have 400 doctors willing to give $5,000 every single one to this goal, I think that is testament to the what it takes to be a very cohesive association and defeat something like Walmart.
Well, and the great news is this was a success story. State Question 793 was defeated, like you said, in this last election, but you know, like any legislative battle, there's never an end date. There's always threats to optometry scope of practice. So as the president of the Oklahoma State Optometric Society, do you see battles coming even in the near future that you need to prepare for? And how should young doctors listening get involved to be prepared for these fights in their own state?
Absolutely. Actually, we just got off a call last night with 25 of our top legislative optometrists and planning for the next legislative session. We know that Walmart is now bringing a bill to our legislature that will basically ask for similar things that they asked in the state question, but taking out some of the offensive language. So that's one. We are trying as a association now to come back with more patient protection language. Because honestly, you know, Walmart is a corporation wanting to make money. You can't tell them they can't do their job. And there are other smaller corporations that are right behind them wanting to do the same thing off of optometry. And I don't think that Walmart by itself is the big problem. I think the big problem is from an association standpoint, from an optometric standpoint, from a practitioner standpoint, the problem we're going to have is when technology gets good enough to replace what we do in the eyes of the patients, and we don't have a say to show them why it's different. So right now we have opticals that have video teleconferencing where there's not a doctor in the room. There are CVSs that have put in kiosk eye care. And where the legislative laws are not strong enough to make sure there is a true doctor-patient relationship, that is where the foundation of that doctor-patient relationship starts to crumble. Because when someone can go and get a pseudo-examination and think they've had their eyes examined from a kiosk and miss those things that we all know can be visually threatening or even life-threatening, and companies like Hubble or whoever can, you know, rewrite prescriptions or extend prescriptions without an interaction, without a doctor. Those are the technologies that we as an entire national profession have to find a way, one, to work against, but also to incorporate. And that's the biggest, I think that's the biggest hurdle we are going to face, is we can't say technology is bad. We can't say these technologies are going to, you know, harm patients. They're here to help patients and make it more efficient and more effective, but we've got to find a way to incorporate it in our practices or in our profession so that it works to the benefit of both, meaning keeping the doctor in control of the patient's eye care and eye health, but understanding where technology can benefit going forward so that we can continue to provide and be the provider for the patient's eye health care and not look like we're the scared profession that can't evolve into a technology that's going to be a benefit at some point and somehow. So that's our legislative goal at this point from our Oklahoma Association is where are we in, as a profession in providing the patient the access to care they need in a rural state with the technology that helps with that without usurping the doctor-patient relationship. That's where we are. And from the students coming out, getting involved early. And I think that really has to do with the association and the state board proactively working with the student. The only reason I'm involved is because I was basically hounded upon as a student that it's important, and this is why, from both the state board and the association early on. So I think that in some states, the association and the state board and the schools don't really get along as well as I think they do in Oklahoma. And I think that's one reason I think that there's a lack of association membership, because it's not brought to them early on as how important it is. That's the pillars of which we build our association on and build our growth and our continuity on.
If there's ever been a story to inspire a young doctor as to why it's important, I think this is definitely one to see every little person, everything that you do really, really counts and matters. So thank you so much for sharing this story with us today. And Oklahoma has been leading the charge in optometry for decades now, and I know they'll continue to do so. But thank you guys for all the work you did on this really big challenge to optometry that happened, not just for Oklahoma, but nationwide. I mean, this is something that could have affected optometrists across the nation if Oklahoma were to fall in this.
Well, thank you very much for letting me share my story.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast, and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.